This is Todd Coburn of Cal Poly Pomona with the Aerospace Structure Series. This audio file is the second damage tolerance lecture, and it's going to talk about what happens after we found a positive margin of safety for fast fracture. Remember, if we have margin of safety when we compare K1 to K1C, if that's negative, then we have fast fracture, we need to redesign the part. However, if that margin of safety is positive, all that means is we need to do more analysis. The approach we're going to use is going to be, once we've determined that we have positive margin of safety against fast fracture, what we will do is use the coefficients, the same table where we got our K1C for the material. We'll also have coefficients C and M for our Paris equation that will approximate the straight line portion of the fast fracture curve. We will then use that along with the equations in our handbook to predict how that crack grows. Now, there are a number of different ways we can do this. One of them is to use calculus using the actual beta and the change in beta. Now, the problem is the calculus equation gets rather complicated quickly. What happens is the crack is growing with each and every cycle of stress, and the beta is also changing with each and every application of stress, and this makes that calculus equation rather challenging to calculate in a practical and repetitive way. Therefore, what we will often do is just pretend that the beta doesn't change. And so in order to get to minimize our error, what we will use is an average beta. So what we will do when we're using calculus to assess crack growth is we will calculate the beta at our initial crack length. So we determine what the initial crack length is, or we assume a initial crack length that is meaningful. We calculate the beta associated with that. We call that the initial beta. We then evaluate what is the final crack length, and having determined the final crack length, we calculate the beta for that. We then take the average beta, and we use that as if it were a constant in our calculus equation. This allows the only thing that's changing as the load cycle is A, the crack length or crack dimension, and therefore our calculus is rather simple. This approach seems to be superior to many other approaches. There are numeric approaches that we could use that are also presented in your handbook. But in order for those to improve beyond the calculus number, we need a lot of iterations. A little MATLAB program or something like that can actually do a better job of doing that by evaluating beta's change over each and every crack stress application. So, if we want to know how long, how many cycles the part is good for, we are going to first calculate, figure out our initial crack dimension. We're then going to figure out the final crack dimension. We're going to use the coefficients from our for our material, the M and the C. We're going to plug those into the Paris equation to calculate what the final crack length is. Now, when we do this, part of that equation is, remember when we calculated the stress intensity to evaluate fast fracture, we used the maximum stress. When we're evaluating crack growth, we're not going to only use the maximum stress, we're going to use the maximum and the minimum stress, and the way we're going to use those is we're going to calculate the change in stress, maximum in delta K1. So we're going to use the max and min to calculate the delta K1, and we're going to use that in our equation. Now, you can probably sense already that a critical step in this approach is to determine what is the final crack length. One of the best ways to do this is to take your initial crack length and calculate a beta. Assume a slightly larger crack length and calculate a new beta, and keep doing that, slowly making your crack larger and larger until your beta converges on a value that produces the K1 of the fart, where the beta doesn't change for that crack length. Where your K1, so you calculate your crack length, calculate the beta, calculate the K1, compare to K1C. Calculate the new beta, calculate the new crack length, because that crack grew, so add the delta A to the A, you get a new A, calculate a new beta, a new K1 compared to K1C, and so on until you converge. Until you find the maximum crack length associated with K1C. Now the trick here, an easier way, is to iterate by just taking the crack length, calculating the beta, calculating a new crack length, and continuing until it converges. The problem with that is, depending on the shape of the beta curve, you can leap right over the critical point and come up with a nonsensical number for the final crack length. Therefore, what you want to do is, when you iterate for that, slowly increase the crack size A as you evaluate, as you creep up on the critical stress intensity from beneath the critical stress intensity. So you're slowly increasing the crack length A. If you start out with a crack length of like 0.001, then you can go to 0.05, then to 0.01, to 0.02, to 0.05, and so on, slowly increasing to be sure that you don't jump past the critical stress intensity. We also are going to learn how to numerically determine the final crack length and the life of the part. Those methods are in your handbook. They involve a number of iterations. There's actually, the trick with those is it's very dependent, the answer you get is very dependent on how many cycles you assume for each lump. So unless you're checking each and every cycle, those methods are rather approximate. Our answers can be quite different from each other and still be reasonable. You're going to want to study your handbook carefully. I've written that carefully to try and make it clear. And this approach is one of the approaches you can use out there in industry to evaluate damage tolerance. Enjoy.